So we have a project. We have a project. We call it OM Champion Project.
Dans le paquet, il n'est pas signalé en jeu face à Joël Matt et ça va être le but de Chris Wallet. But de Wallet, 1-0 pour l'Olympique de Marseille.
And it looks like the recording started. Welcome back to the Marseille View. It's not been as long as the last time it was between recordings, but it's still been a little bit of time. But interestingly, because we actually looked ahead and predicted the run of games that we've just had with the last two guests, we've got the same guest tonight, which is, it's been a while since this happened, so it's good. And we can do a little bit of a retrospective. So, Kaylee, welcome back.
Hi, guys. A little bit not as optimistic as the last time we spoke. We have a day on cloud nine and anticipating never losing again. But it hasn't been a disaster either. We've qualified in the Europa ultimately, and the defeat against Rennes was kind of inevitable, I think. But it is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, the Kool-Aid is kind of dissipated, but it's cool because we can draw parallels between how we felt a few weeks ago and how we feel now. So our master statistician is also joining us. Charles, welcome back.
Hi, guys. You're right. A broken voice, but still hopeful. And we have not completely given up on the season. So we're still here for another episode.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see what the future holds. So it's kind of cool because it's the international break, so we haven't missed too many games, but we're going to do a bit like we did last time. So we'll start with Europe because that was the first game after the last recording we had. And then we'll talk about the two games we also had in Ligue 1 during that time frame. So there were two European games, two Ligue 1 games. And we will also look ahead to what the future holds in the next couple of weeks, which is quite harsh. But we'll start with that. So I just wanted to start. You know what, guys? I don't do this often, but I did re-listen to the last episode. And we all made predictions about the head-to-head against Marcelino's Villarreal. I think, in retrospect, we weren't that far off, all of us, because we pretty much all said that we thought we would qualify, but it was, in reality, as we now know, it turned out to be closer than we all thought. And it's interesting. I think I said 2-1 on aggregate to us. And actually, we qualified with 4-3 on aggregate. So it wasn't far off. But God damn, did we make it hard for ourselves. But let's start with the first leg. So, yeah, classic unpredictable OM style. We started the game. I think it's probably fair to say it's probably one of our best European games of the last 10, 15 years, regardless of the opposition, regardless of the ref and some of the things that happened where they had the sending off. But damn, we were sort of in the continuity of the previous run of games. We were aggressive. We were on the front foot. We were entrepreneurial. We were pushing forward and creating. And very quickly, we were 2-0 up and then 3-0 up at half time. And then we scored, Bamiyang scored one of probably the goals of the season in the second half to give us that, as we now know, very decisive 4-goal lead. But Dan, guys, I can't remember your exact predictions, both of you, but we were all sort of cautious, weren't we? I mean, Kaylee, it was like a pleasant surprise, no?
The home leg, absolutely, yeah. I can't remember what I predicted actually, but I thought we'd get through, but probably a bit more cagey than that. But then It was a total dominant performance, wasn't it? I'm not even, just off the top of my head, I'm not even sure Villarreal had a shot on target in that game at all. And then they had Moreno come in and make that disastrous sub appearance with his red card immediately, pretty much. Yeah, it was pretty dominant, wasn't it, altogether, really? And topped off with that goal. And the narrative afterwards about that goal was like, oh, did he mean it? He definitely meant it. Come on.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it just encapsulated the game, really. Like, you couldn't have asked for it to be better, really, could you?
Is it interesting you mentioned that Villarreal didn't... you're probably right. I don't think they had the shot on target. Maybe two, or maybe... two shots full stop and maybe one on target. I'm not quite sure, but we didn't have that many either, which again goes to, it's a perfect segue to our statistician. I mean, we were just clinical, and it just, everything seemed to go our way, Charles, right?
Yep, 11 shots, 6 on target for 3 XG, while Villarreal got barely 0.3 XG. So everything was clinical that night. Contrary to what we're going to say against Rennes. I'd say I was disappointed by Marcelino's approach. I would say it makes our life easier. It was very reactive, patient, defensive approach, like a classic. No, we're playing away a game. We're going to put more defenders. They play with 4 central backs, from what I could remember. Capoue was on the bench. Pyro was on the bench. So clearly, they parked the bus. And you know what, we found solutions pretty much everywhere. Sarit had a very good game, Ilan India as well. Aubameyang was clinical, like you said. So it was a good night. It made our life easier and we did well. So nothing else to add. It's one of those beautiful Thursday evening nights in Europa League when everything turns up and it's all green and beautiful. So yeah.
Yeah, we did all predict sort of a win at home and a qualification, but by a tighter margin. But yeah, I guess it's a bit of luck, and we don't often have the rub of the green, as we call it, right? But we did that night. With everything worked out for us, everything didn't work out for them. We just sort of smothered them in the first half, and it was I think it was Vertu's first game back after he didn't play against Clermont, did he? He was still missing, and that was his first game back after a couple of weeks or a few weeks out, and straight away the impact he has, I mean, like him, don't like him, whatever, he's one of our most consistent performers this season. And I think in midfield, the approach and the wave of confidence that we were surfing on because of the previous run of results and the goal margins and stuff, everything went our way. Nothing went their way. I guess the foreground margin, now you've given the stats, Charlotte, in a way it's a little bit flattering, but it's not, because... you know, we've had other games this season, as we've often pointed out on the show, that we've had not the similar level of XG, probably not, but
this season is one of the worst in terms of outperformance. We are underperforming so badly, both Paulo Lopez in the woods and our strikers in the opposition box. We are underperforming so badly. But away from the stats, I really like the approach taken by Gasset on that game.
Yeah.
We all know about Marcelinho 4-4-2, and we need to find spaces on both sides, because they're playing very centralized, it's two lines of four. And with Ilman and Ndiaye, we found that extra man in the middle. Aubameyang and Ndiaye fix their back four by standing between their central backs and their full backs. And they free up one man in the middle with Ilman and Ndiaye. So it's a classic fake 4-4-2 with a false nine with Ilman and Ndiaye. I think that worked really well. So that's why we created so many chances in the first half. Yeah, just in the second half. But the first half was both our players went full on, and Gasset getting his plan A spot on, and it worked really well. So, from a tactical point of view, I remember that game because I was worried, like, how are we going to be able to score against Villarreal if they decide to park the bus? And Gassi got the perfect solution.
Yeah, everything worked out and the game plan. But again, like kind of, because we're going to discuss the next few games on the show, but it was like everything had led to that moment, right? It did kind of feel like the weeks before, even though all of us, we were a bit like, we were happy with Gassi's starts and the fact that the players look reinvigorated and a bit more confident and
but
especially
it was
like
against very weak teams.
Yeah,
so we
but that's
knew,
the
like,
thing.
First
but,
time
but,
we got a proper opposition, it would be different.
But that's the point. I thought this would be the test, and actually we for whatever reason, because they were crap and we were exceptional and still surfing on that wave, but it all worked out and it just everything went to plan. And they were down to 10 men quickly, and we just had the right attitude, and maybe we should have scored another. You know, you could be a bit critical or cynical and go, yeah, but yeah, you know, we whatever. But yeah, as we said, compared to the previous few games where we didn't take the chances, at least we build up a lead. And I guess just to finish off on this, I mean, it's because we did spend a bit of time on it, and obviously we know Marcelino started the season with us, and I made the point noticeably that I'm a bit wary because he built the squad and he knows the weaknesses, and you know he knows the stadium and he knows that the environment could get hostile for the home team very quickly. But I mean, Kate, can you if football in general outside of Marseille, right? I don't think I can remember a time where an ex-manager, whether he'd managed a team a year or two before or whether 6 months before, like Marcelino. I mean, can you imagine, like, that must have been the worst night of his life, going back to that stadium, walking back into that environment with the hostility that, you know, you could expect, which would be natural from the fans who never rated him apparently, and it couldn't have gone worse, could it? I mean, how the hell do you recover from that? I mean, can you think of any comparison where it's happened to another manager where they've played the next team and they've been humiliated that bad?
I can't off the top of my head think of anyone where the turnover's been that quick, because it wasn't really that long ago, to be honest. I'm trying to think, maybe in the Premier League even, where an old manager's came back, and I really can't think of anything from that timescale. But in terms of Marcelino himself, like there was some quotes from him before the game, as in, which you just knew aren't true. You can't be sacked in that manner. And he was never really given a chance, whatever we think about him. Like, he wasn't, whatever his qualities are. But it would be unnatural for him not to come back and want to win and be affected by that, the booing, the jeering, stuff like that. But he had kind of played it down in pre-match comments, like it's just another game type thing. And I think his behaviour to, was it, I'm not sure if this was in the second leg, actually I might be confusing it, so forgive us if I am, but did he refuse to shake somebody's hand? Was it?
It's in the return leg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he refused. Harriet? He refused to shake
Harriet.
His hand or something. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
and then Gundam Gavis was next to him, and yeah, he was rattled. Yeah.
Yeah, he was completely rattled. And I think it was obvious from his initial pre-match comments, like, there's not a human alive that would be going back into that scenario not desperate to win and for the performance that they put in. Because as good as I thought we were tactically, everything that has just been mentioned, they were very poor. They were very, very poor.
Terrible.
Yeah, had Serloff on the bench and stuff like that, I think, didn't they?
There was this whole scenario about apparently them all having food poisoning or whatever, right? That's right.
There was a whole, because I think we're all quite pleased with that, weren't we? But as it was, we didn't actually.
Well, we were all like, this is cool, but we're all like, yeah, well, typical, this, because it's too good to be true, we'll probably shit the bed, and we didn't. But yeah, the reason I asked the question, and Charlie, you can maybe you can think of a comparison, I don't know, but yeah, it's just mental, as you say. Like, the guys spent, we've had ex-managers, you know, they leave for whatever reason, and they don't necessarily say anything good or bad, and he's not said anything too bad, but he has repeatedly said when asked, oh yeah, well, I just you know, it is what it is, but I wasn't given time to show what I'm worth, and I've got my track record speaks for itself, and you know, you would think any top manager worth their soul would want to go back there and prove a point, which is kind of what we all sort of predicted the last show. And for it to go that badly, it must be really painful. I mean, it's just like, yeah, it couldn't have gone any worse. It's the worst possible scenario. I mean, yeah.
I guess he was
Charles, do you have anything to add?
I guess he was preparing for the second leg to make your transition. Well,
but you could go and play defensively and maybe, you know, you lose 2-0 or something, but to lose 4-0 and to get a sending off and a penalty
It was a good summary of why it never clicked between us and Marcelino. We are Marseille. Even if we play Manchester United or Manchester City at home, we tried. Remember when Villas-Boas tried against Manchester City? With us 5-4-1, with Camara playing at the back.
No, it's 3-0 at home, wasn't it?
Do you remember, with only one shot, it was Camara trying a lob from his own half.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not accepted at all. This is Marseille. That doesn't represent our values. You can do it at Villarreal, you can't do it at Marseille.
Yeah, and your comparison's a bit, it's difficult because remember the context. I mean, it was just after COVID, we'd had a really bad summer
schedule,
so ABB was doing with what he had. The problem is the difference with when Marcelino was the coach at the start of the season, we'd spent quite a bit of money, signed some players, and the expectations were a bit higher than they were with ABB. That's what I'm trying to say, mate.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just like, once again, we're not going to do the Marcelino episode again, but it questioned the appointment of a manager like him, who clearly doesn't fit with our club values, I would say.
Basically, the droit au but, right? If you were to summarize, it's like...
Yeah. I mean, he is droit au but, but from his own box, from parking...
Yeah, not in the way the Benetton likes. Yeah.
So, and I'll be okay to kind of give up the ball. I will always remember what Alex said during that episode with Marcelino after one or two games. Like, we are stressing so much when we don't have the ball. Like, the whole stadium is whistling and just screaming when the opposition got the ball because we don't like not having the ball. And this manager has built his career around defending without the ball. We can be better by the opposition without playing, without having the possession, sorry. So clearly it didn't click at all. And this game was a reminder that it would never clicked between Velodrome and Marcelino.
And yeah, he paid the price that night. We won 4-0. Personally, very unexpected, happy. But yeah, it just felt, you know, it was a bit like the continuity of We're Untouchable at the minute. It just seems like everything's working. Ndiaye is finally finding form. Aubameyang's walking on water, everything. Before we go to Ligue 1, because we've divided up, let's talk about the second leg. Because, again, I think we've named quite a few of these episodes over the years, Jekyll and Hyde. And this was a perfect example yet again of, you know, the best of OM and the worst of OM. And it was funny because the whole few days leading up to that, we are the first French club since PSG beat Barcelona and then lost 6-1 in the remontada, as we all know. We were the first French club to take a 4-0 lead into the second leg of a European knockout game. And all the memes during the 2 days, you know, it's normal, it's the banter. Oh, yeah, but it won't happen again. It's not possible. But fuck me, did it come close, right?
To leave Kelly a good 10 minutes to describe Ballard against Alexander.
I mean, that's one of the axes I was going to focus on. You're right. But just to summarize, right? So you go into that game and And it's just not acceptable to the approach was wrong. As much as we got it right in the first leg, the approach is one thing, you know, the coach can only do so much, and Gasser or even Gattuso, if he was still there, you can imagine the minimum the coach will say was, guys, don't take it for granted. Nothing is won. You never know if they score first, big atmosphere or not. Do not let them back into the game. Just put them under pressure. Play like you're starving for the ball. Make fouls if you need to, but don't give them a hint of confidence. Just not even 10%. We can't do it, because as good as things are going, you never know. And we fucked up royally. I mean, it was. Maybe it's an understatement to say that we were lucky to only be 1-0 down at half time, because realistically, if they had at least a 2-0 lead at half time, I think it would have gone minimum to extra time. But it was only 1-0 at half time, and it was 3-0 and then 3-1. Plus, you know, Aubameyang came on, missed a big chance very early in the second half. I thought it had gone in watching it at the bar, and that he'd been flagged for offside. And then when I realised he'd missed it, I was like, oh shit, like, wow. And then they scored two more goals, and suddenly it's squeaky bum time, as Fergie would call it. And yeah, miraculously, Aubameyang, a moment of brilliance, you know, takes a throw in deep in the half in beginning of stoppage time, skins a couple of players, sets
you
up
mean Jonathan Kloos brilliant.
Well, Kloos did well to get on the end of it, mate. But Aubameyang, wow, you know, he played himself into that position by taking the throw in and going for it instead of going to the corner flag, and we secured the all important goal to put everybody to ease. But yeah, we were terrible, right? And Katie, yeah, Charles has teed you up nicely. I mean, Ballardy or not Ballardy, Sorloth had a good game, but Christ, we'll be terrible at marking him, right?
Yeah, I mean, Sorloth and Kapui just had the run of the game for the entire game. It was incredible, really. It just to like wind it back to the start of the game. So I expected a conservative approach. I let Charles do the tactical breakdown, but I think we went with five at the back, didn't we? Merlan, Belardi, and Mbemba, Bamo,
correct,
and Klaus. As I think they were kind of wing, but we didn't start with the striker, did we? Orba was on the bench. So I think a few people raised a few eyebrows with because then it's leaving you nothing for the counter. So I think it kind of set up the narrative for the game, because it was, don't get us wrong, I'm sure if you're a neutral watching that game, it was brilliant. But for us, we were all on the verge of like a cardiac event, I think. But yeah, sorry, back to what you said. Sorloth and Kapu just had the... Belardi has had one of the worst games I've seen him play for us, and I know I'm very critical of him anyway. But Mbemba was having to do several different jobs. He just was not switched on, and so, like, everything physicality was outdone by as well. But to be honest, I think Klaus was equally as bad. I know he made up for it in the end with his goal, but there was a few 1 out of 10 performances. Saul wasn't very good. Unai again wasn't very good. Ndiaye didn't have the impact he had had when we had thought he turned a corner. Lot of ill discipline as well. Did we end up with like 6? Maybe to be expected in this type of game where everything's kind of falling apart. but was it 6 yellows we ended up on? 5, 6 yellows, something like that. And in the end, ultimately, it was Lopez's save before our goal where Villarreal were going for the 4th. And Klaus was able to tap it in. But yeah, it was pretty disastrous, and how we've clung on in the end, I don't know, because realistically they could have had more goals. I know there was a bit of controversy around Sorloth's goal.
The offside, not offside.
Yeah, I thought initially it was, and then but people were like kind of doing the conspiracy thing with the lines. I think it was kind of misleading. I know we're like the bash refs and stuff, but the line was drawn.
It's not the line.
It's not the line. It's the timing of the pass. Yeah, it's the timing of the pass. I guess. Right. I mean, but you can say that maybe, but. It doesn't change the fact that we were exposed and we were weak, and we'd open ourselves up to just conceding. And you know, yes, you could criticize the ref, and it turns out it was the same ref, ironically, that screwed us against Panathinaikos in August when he sent off Kondogbia for sneezing or fuck knows what in the first leg there, right? But it doesn't change the fact that it was coming. If it wasn't then, it probably would have been 2 minutes later on another attack by them. And it's just, as you say, no one was up for it and we were overrun. But Lopez, you say that save, I remember the save very well just before we scored. I'm not going to say it was an easy save, but it wasn't the most difficult. But let's not forget, he did make a few before that in the first half, notably. And I also remember, as you were saying... Yeah. Yeah, as you were saying, Balerdi, him and everybody else, quite a few others were shit. There was also very early on, and like after 10 minutes, Mbemba made a brilliant last-ditch tackle to counter a shot from Soloff or somebody, which kind of set the tone. And as you said, it was just worrying because, Shank, go ahead, provide your summary, but I've got a question to ask you both afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, on Paul Lopez, I mean, I think he did his job that game. I just checked the XG, 1.9. So, I mean, once again, he was not a Steve Mandanda Il Fenomeno night. He just did his job. I think on the game, what really mattered to me, and I guess we're probably going to come back to this as well with the Rennes game, is Gasset communication prior to the game and the back three, like Kelly said, kind of go in the same direction. We got scared. We just went to prevent from losing, to keep the score. And I'm afraid in that group of players with the confidence running that low, you are constantly on the edge from being a hero to coming back to a zero. So you need to go full on. And we've been seeing that even with Tudor last season. This team is not capable of managing, handling, dealing with low light when you're under pressure. There's no one stepping up at that moment. Even when Sanchez was around, you remember like when we're desperate at the end of the game against Tudor, even him could not just hold the ball and make the whole block come up. And not to assist from what? Ilman India, your Sar. So I think the communication, I mean, the back three, it really reminded me what Blanc and Cassette did when they played against City. Do you remember when they put what the name of that Ivory Coast right back? Serge Aurier in the back three against the second leg. You know, like, you send a message to the players and also you send a message to the opposition. So I was not... I mean, when I saw the starting lineup, when I saw the communication prior to the game, I was like, we are up for something difficult, which happened. So we're just weak. She's not mentally ready for it, not ready to fight, and it's Europe. You are not ready for it, don't play 100%. You lose your challenges, and here you go. So the stats I wanted to bring is, Sorloth play 9 IOL challenges. He won 8. That's pretty crazy if you think about it. Typically, like for a striker, like winning 50 or 60% of your IO challenges, you are top decile, 85%. Balerdi was actually not the worst. He was 50-50. Mbemba, how many did he won? Mbemba won, don't have the stats. Maite, 66. And Mbemba and Balerdi, Mbemba, 33. But he was mainly Balerdi dealing with Sorloth, and he, like I said, he almost lost all his challenges. And Villarreal Plat was literally sending long ball to Sorloth. So we are playing in our box and we're feeling the pressure. That's all they did. So disappointing from Gasset and disappointing from the team.
Charles, just on that note as well, it wasn't just Soloff that was causing problems as well. Kapui just had a real handle on the game because the midfield was so poor as well, you know.
Gidess, the winger as well. You've just taken the stats, Charles, of the players against Soloff, but it was just the theme, which was we were losing all the challenges, all the 50-50s. We just and you can lose them, but you've got to look up for it. And we just didn't look up for it. You know, we just looked like a deer in the headlights. And I guess the first thing is, like, Charlotte, it's interesting because you've sort of mentioned, you know, well, regardless of whether you're OM or not, you know, you can never be comfortable in Europe. Whoever you are, because the tide can turn for whatever reason, like it did for them in the first game. They got a red card. Well, maybe, who knows, we could have got a red card and then it was even more stressful, but we didn't. But it's what I remember feeling in the lead up the week to the game, and actually we didn't really mention this on the show last time, but I think we said it in the WhatsApp group, Charles, was I remember Brighton, where all we needed was a draw, and it felt like the same, where we went with the approach was we don't need to go 110%. And whether it's it stems obviously from the coach and also the squad, but it's a cultural thing. And sadly, with Marseille, it happens quite a bit, but fortunately, it didn't cost us the qualification. But it's just that lack of paranoia or professionalism or commitment that goes. It's not because we won 4-0 in the first leg that we don't still have to prove that we belong here and justify that we've learned our lessons from Tottenham the year before.
This team for the last how many years now?
Are you saying this club
can have a very big highlight and also very big low light, and we still don't know how to deal with a slow light. So just don't get into the sort of mentality don't tell the players we're gonna go there to suffer. Marseille doesn't work this way. Our current group of players are not ready to suffer.
Yeah, 100%. Like in defense of Garcia, he hasn't been here very long, and there's only so much like that can be done with this group of players. Like, we'll talk about Klaus's comments later, I guess, after we cover the games. But that is indicative of the type of player we have in terms of mentality. I don't think any of them, a lot of them don't have a great deal of football intelligence, never mind like that kind of intelligence. Like, I think another disappointing thing, probably in terms of Gassi, actually, from this game, the subs didn't really do anything. Enrique didn't do anything. Harry lost the ball quite a bit, if memory serves well. Aubameyang obviously got the assist in the end for Klaus, but it changed. The game was too far gone that even changing it didn't change anything because the mentality is so ingrained.
Yeah, the tone was set.
Kelly, when you're a manager, you should be able to read the room, right? So you look at you look at a group of players, just like, who's gonna be able to step up if something goes wrong? Who's gonna make the extra mile? If you're starting those players, giving them excuse not to make this extra work, not to put them against the wall, you know they're gonna disappoint you. You know they're not going to make the extra run. So that's a problem. So to me, it's on Gasset, because even if it's just new, I mean, you can see with those players, like, it's nothing new, you know them all. So, to me, still on Gasset, but that's my own opinion. Maybe you disagree with me, but to me, it's still on Gasset.
I don't necessarily disagree. I just think the approach he's had to have with them, because the harmony and mentality in the squad was so bad under Gattuso or whatever, that's all he's really had to go on, keeping them all happy type thing, which is exactly what lost him in his previous job in reality with the Ivory Coast. But it's worked in the short term here. But I think whilst we all got carried away last time about him, there's only so much he has the capacity to override. And I think once because I think it was this game actually where they started looking tired. Well, maybe the schedule catch up.
It started with Villarreal saying that the player starting to look tired because you had a non-game and say, oh, my player starting to be tired and you have your Villarreal game. I mean, you have two options. You try to be the nice granddad and be like, oh, guys, I know you're tired, but make the extra work. I need you. Or you go like Tudor. Like, guys, it doesn't exist. It's in your head. If you're not happy, if you're tired, you're going to stay on the bench forever. And to me, that's why we loved Tudor last season. And I think that works better given the type of player that we have. We don't have like the Cristiano Ronaldo type, the guy who's going to wake up at 5 a.m. to go and get his doing his workout in advance before the training. It's quite the opposite. So you need to be the bad cop and for them to work their ass off.
Go ahead, Kate.
I was just going to say on that thing, though, you've got to think is that Gassé knows he's here for a limited amount of time. And there's no expectation of him. Nobody expected anything of him coming in other than continuation of the shit what had been. So I think he's a bit of a victim of this.
That's why he can put the Spurs on the bench. Just here for two months. Put them on the bench. You don't want to, there are bloody 10 games to play. You don't want to make that.
But guys, you know what? You've when I said like before this that I wanted to ask a question, you've started touching on it. But Shab, just to what you've just said, we didn't have like the Cristiano types to get up at five. We did. We had Sanchez. But the point is, whether it's Cristiano or Sanchez, it's a problem in Ligue 1 in France. Marseille, yes, we're over covered by the media and there's. They love dramatic narratives. They love to overhype any minor incident as a crisis or a tabloid worthy soap opera and shit. The fact is, it's in Ligue 1 in general. Sorry, we had Sanchez last year who maybe not 5 a.m. like Ronaldo, but he was leading by example, motivation wise, and all that. And it still wasn't enough because inevitably, whether it's physically or whatever, and actually last year was probably the fittest I've ever seen when since Bielsa in terms of our ability to apply the game plan over consistently win or lose, and good or bad. And yes, a few teams sussed us out over the course of the season, but damn, we looked like a proper professional team where they, as you say, you're tired, you're not tired. Well, I expect 110% in training and I won't hesitate to sub you out the following weekend, right? The thing is, the question I was going to ask you guys, and you sort of touched on it, and it's an interesting continuity after euphoria is not the right word, but the credits and the sort of praise we gave Gassé, which was he came in and fixed the heads. I mean, I'm not a professional manager, whatever. I've trained youth players or whatever, but As you mentioned, Kay, he comes in the climate. Nobody expects anything. We go on a good run. Shit teams or not shit teams, opponents. Regardless, we score like 20 goals in 4 games. And yes, the youngest and naive and inexperienced fans amongst the fan base will go, oh, finally we're back. It wasn't the players. It was just the manager, Gattuso, blah blah. And yeah, I agree with that to an extent, but. Can you just imagine, you go into that dressing room at half-time, only 1-0 down. Again, I think it's very fortunate that it was only 1-0 because they had chances. And you're Gassé, and Charles, you sort of touched on it, and you're looking around. And as you say, Charles, you're thinking, fuck. You realise just how much of a bit of,
leadership.
Yeah. Beyond leadership, you realise that the last few weeks have been a euphemism, a rebound effect.
And technical leader.
Yeah, because it could be look at that dressing room. Yeah, but you look at that dressing room and suddenly you feel like shit. It's so fragile that the last few weeks don't matter right now. I can't even try and hype the guys up and say to them, oh, come on, guys. We scored 20 goals in the last 4 or 5 games. Like, I can imagine, again, I don't know, I wasn't there, right? And I don't want to pretend like I'm an expert, whatever, but you can imagine a few of those players, notably like Klose and Ndiaye, who we mentioned, who seem to have found better form since Gasset arrived and stuff. Suddenly, they've reverted to how they were under Gattuso in those first 45 minutes. And you can imagine looking at them in the dressing room and they're going, shit, you know, the ghosts are back. The stress, the anxiety of, oh, shit, maybe it was only, a purple patch. And this is actually my level when I'm tested against European level opposition. And it's like, I guess the question I was going to ask you guys is like, was that a bit of a turning point for not only Gasset, but for the squad where, yes, we had a great run of results, but actually not all of the the sickness and the ailments of the squad mentally are cured. Was that maybe, do you think, the moment where they realised, shit, it's actually really fragile and, it's just temporary?
To be honest with you, I'm not really at that level of panic. I think because in terms of Gasset causing a problem, I think the way it was set up, it should have been changed sooner when it was apparent the way the game was turning. And from what you just said, Ben, about maybe having a leader or something like that, and whether he's leadership quality or not, whatever, arguably Aubameyang is that person in terms of experience from what we have. And he was probably left on a bit too on the bench a bit too long. But to be honest with you, I didn't have a high expectation from that game. As long as you qualify, I don't think it's a disaster. And we did, ultimately. And then if you add the Ren game into the mix, I don't think anyone expected we'd go there and win, really. I didn't expect it to be as tired looking and bad. Well, was it really that bad? I'm not even sure. Like, the pen was controversial. We'll get onto that game, but I'm not at panic stations with it. I think once a lot of them and I know we can criticize Klaus for his comments, but
we won't.
Well, look at Klaus and I, for instance, in terms of mentality, they're essentially just people that are now international players. Klaus has had his head in the French squad for a while, and Unai is essentially an international player. To me, he just doesn't look interested playing for us at all. And there's no doubt in my mind their heads have been with Morocco and France respectively now, especially from the comments we've had. And to be fair, I'm not one that makes excuse for professional footballers, but the likes of Saw and Jai and Bemba have played a lot of games when you factor in AFCON. So I think inevitably there was going to be a dip, and if it was going to be anyway, it was probably going to be a way to run after playing that game in midweek in the cup. I think once they have a break, because I think the league have changed the timings, haven't they, to coincide with Europe, so the French teams get a rest or whatever, I think it'll be improved. I don't think it'll be at the level the past two games have been. I think, and probably not the level that we're became accustomed to in that little purple period, but I'm not panicking yet on in terms of that, if that makes sense.
I'm not panicking, but we are where we deserve to be, 6th, 7th. I don't see us going further away from that. And you see the cycle with Gattuso is repeating again with Gasset, fixing the head first. When everyone is under pressure because you are so far, you are against the wall, and you got 3-4 games, everyone is under pressure, and then people start talking, oh, top 4. We're going to go back to Champions League next season. And then the manager starting talking, oh, yeah, my players are tired. He got all the excuses, all the context perfect for those players to do a little bit less, just a little bit. And like we said against Villarreal, we are not good enough to not be at 110% when we play against Montpellier, when we play against Rennes, when we play against Villarreal. Those players think because they play for Marseille, they are playing one of the top 10, 20 clubs in Europe. This is not the case. We are not better than average team in Ligue 1. We are not better than a round 16 Europa League. Marseille, if we want to win a game, we need to be at 110%. We need to put the pressure non-stop. And that's why Gattuso failed. And that's why Gasly is going to fail to bring us into top four. But the opposite version is a Tudor version. Can you keep this group of players for 1 year under the constant pressure? Or like Bielsa did. He lasts 12 months.
We know the answer. It's not possible.
It's French Ligue 1. It's Marseille. The players are better than the club, are bigger than the club.
There's the player thing, which is if you have the right characters in the squad, you would like to think they're gonna carry the others upwards, and it worked for an extent last season. But Bielsa, I mean, you compare to Bielsa, we had good players which had been together for a number of years and hadn't had the best coaches or whatever, and suddenly Bielsa got them all 200% fit and it clicked and whatever. But it eventually exploded, and whether it's Marseille or Lyon or Lille or whatever, I think only PSG in Ligue 1, because of the structure of the club and the talent and character and quality of confirmed players they're able to buy, they can sustain that continuity. But the difference is, it's like, yeah, I think, Charles, you make a point, but if you compare to like Bayern Munich or Man City or Liverpool in the last 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah.
The difference is those teams go, especially Manchester City, like don't get me wrong, whether it's Europe or Premier League or Brighton
FA Cup,
an Aston Villa or Sheffield. Someone, we'll beat them because the rubber of the green on the day. But over a 38 game Premier League season, you just know, you go into that game and a bit like Sir Alex Ferguson's United and Guardiola's Barcelona, you know that even if you're at 200 fucking percent, the whole 11 players, teammates in your squad, if you're like a Giron or Villarreal, inevitably Messi or Iniesta or someone, you will try your best, you'll put in a good show, but the odds are they will steamroll you because they're a fucking machine. And Marseille, we are not. That's the thing, Sean. To your point, I agree with you, which is you would like to think it, maybe it should be the case, right? And the last time I remember this happening, I mean, it's not been that often with PSG, apart from when they had Ibrahimovic and Cavani, and Ibrahimovic was just a beast. Like, they would lose a couple of games a season, but they looked untouchable, is my point. And a bit like Lyon, when they won those 7 Ligue 1 in a row. Marseille, every team, forget Europe, because we're almost nobodies in Europe, but every Ligue 1 team or amateur Coupe de France team, Marseille is the game of their lives.
Yeah, but it's the same.
They're not afraid.
I mean, when Barcelona plays bloody Giron, it's a game for the life for Giron. The problem is that, and that's why I like you bring the name of Ibrahimovic. I hate the guy. He's a dickhead. But you can see how Paris Saint-Germain shifted from being an average or good Ligue 1 team to being one of the best in Europe. Why? Because when you're going to play against Giron, and Giron is ready to kick your ass, Ibrahimovic is going to tell them, I'm going to smash you. I'm going to put 3 against you against Giron. That's the mentality. Yeah, we're facing adversity, but I know I'm better than you, and I'm going to smash you. I'm going to prove you that I'm way better. And there's no one in that bloody group that is capable of saying that. Yeah, it's going to be difficult to get viral. Okay, the manager wants us to play the low block park, but if I got a fucking counter-attack, I'm going to score it. Do you remember the end of the first half?
Do you remember
the attempt to lob the keeper from Aubameyang or the beginning of the second
beginning
half?
Beginning of the second half, yeah.
That tells a lot about Aubameyang as kind of a leader. He is. I'm taking Aubameyang as an example. Ibrahimovic.
You can't compare them. Yeah, I agree with you. You can't compare them. But that's exactly what we're both saying.
Yeah, exactly. We have an average group of League One players. We think they are better than average. But if you want to go to the next step in Europe, if you want to be in top 4, top 3 in Europe every year, you need to think in case of adversity. Give me the ball. Give me the ball. I'm going to be better. I'm going to shoot. I'm going to go.
But again, to your point, we had that a little last year. I mean, Sanchez was one of those, and then Mbemba had a great season. We did have those characters in theory you know, in, imagine it was like an Atalanta or, I don't know, an Aston Villa or something outside of Ligue 1, or maybe even, this would maybe even work, it's worked at Monaco a few times over the last 10 years, because they don't have the pressure of Marseille. And it's not enough, sadly, that for me, the realisation is that one or two of those players is good, but it's not enough because the rest of the squad, under Tudor, there was a period where everybody was at 110%, close, even Tavares for a period. And then very quickly, for reasons unknown, they just revert to type because it's too difficult, and the lack of consistency in the structure of the club and the lack of a club culture of, we can manage these games, Charles, as you said, the Villarreal and whatever. If you know, if you're Liverpool or you're Real Madrid, and again, maybe the comparison's a bit far-fetched, but even a Leipzig, let's be honest, or even a Sevilla in the Europa League in the last 10 years, you just know, because you've built up that experience and that club culture, even though the squad changes every couple of years or whatever, the staff, the coaches, the kitchen lady and all those people, they're just like, yeah, you can do it. We've done it before. We've been through harder before. At Marseille, we don't have that.
We don't have a talismanic figure, Ben, like, say, that lives and breathes Marseille. I know Bilardi feels connected or whatever, but he's had a guy out on hunger strike.
By default,
we don't have a Lacazette.
By default.
Bilardi
is that guy by default, Kayleigh, you know? And to your point, I mean,
It's not the quality of like a Lacazette for Lyon who can pull them out the shit that is so connected to Lyon. Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't have a talisman that can really pick a squad up and drive it, if that makes sense. Like, I don't feel that they're connected to the club. There's a few that I feel couldn't give a shit whether what they are not, Klaus and I. But we don't have that Lacazette type figure. I'm not talking necessarily about quality here. I'm talking about a mixture
let's bring it back to Marseille. It's interesting. I saw someone randomly put a poll on Twitter today, and they were comparing, they were like, who would you rather have, Sana or Rongier? And that's exactly what we're all saying, which is, and everybody's going to have a different opinion on this, but one guy replied and had, I thought, a very impartial view, which was, for the attitude and the balls and the way he would overcompensate with character and being overzealous and shouting and tackling and going in for the right challenge at the right time to pick up the stadium, Sana. But probably overall, Rongier is a better footballer. And I agree 100%. And I think that's exactly what we're all saying, which is, it's that lack of consistent characters. Because when you look back at Sana, you know, he was there just before Giretz came in, and then he stayed. And then at the time, because Diouf ran a tight ship and we were lucky to keep Giretz for 3 years, we added characters like that to that. We added Nyang, who turned into a leader over time. We had Ribéry, who was talented. We had Djibril Cissé, who was experienced. And so you need to build on that. And the problem is with the regime, you know, Pablo's fault, not Pablo's fault, and McCourt's fault more than anyone. But because there's a lack of consistency, and we're just trying to buy the best possible profile in any given position rather than thinking about building and trying to bring on the player that we could improve and that kind of thing, and building a squad spirit, because it's too volatile and it feels too temporary, as we've all discussed many times before, it's difficult to instill that culture.
Yeah, 100%. We're missing the elephant in the room of Pablo and certain elements of recruitment, like taking people on a free just in case they might turn out good, like Jean Onana. That kind of helped us. So we lost Sanchez, got Oba in. The different in terms of mentality, like, one's more individualistic than another. One is more, you know, like, easily upset than the other. Auber had problems with the fans, you know.
We've compensated statistically, to your point. Yeah, I agree. But we haven't compensated character-wise. And that's I think that's a recurring theme at Marseille over the last 20 years, is that some of the best seasons we've had, like I remember under Perrin, you know, we had Leboeuf fair, but we had like players that I was young then, but looking back, like Celestini, who were silent, you know, joueurs de l'ombre, as we say in French, like the players that nobody pays attention to, but fuck me, they're consistent and they do their stats. And they instill that confidence. And more recently, like the Luis Gustavos and the Heinzers, and, you know, I apart from Sanchez, Longoria hasn't found his sort of Sana or Heinze or Celestini as in a soldier. And sadly, because Rongier's been injured, maybe, who knows, maybe he could have evolved into it. Maybe he still will. But because he's injured, it's just not happened this season. And honestly, I feel like we're missing him, especially with the injury crisis. But Dan, we've gone off on a tangent. very quickly, we've done Europe, and the conclusion is we qualified, very painfully we qualified, and we're now playing Benfica the next round. And as we know, the draw potentially pits us against Liverpool in the semi. Very quickly, guys, will we pass Benfica, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes.
This is a Benfica side that just struggled against Rangers of the Scottish League, who are good in Europe, don't get us wrong, I'm not being disrespectful at all. And the struggle past Toulouse as well, it's not the same Benfica that you associate as being Benfica. It's just not, we've got every chance, in my opinion. If we go back to the level before these two games, which I think we will actually, to a degree. So I'm fairly confident, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I think we have a chance. We'll see. But and very quickly, we went off on the tangent. We've done Europe, the Ligue 1 game, so we won 2-0 against Nantes very painfully. And then we lost to Rennes. The end of a very long run of games and playing in Europe. And but the one thing, Charles, you sort of mentioned it, because Gasset came out with it before and then after the Nantes game, was do you buy this excuse of the players being tired? I mean, there are two schools of thought on this, and personally, 50-50. I mean, yes, okay, regardless of the level of the opposition, you could argue we performed kind of above the level that we've seen the squad at for the rest of the season in that run of wins. We scored lots of goals. You know, it looked like party time. The team were back having fun and stuff. And then the minute we hit that rhythm of two games a week again, the other 50% for me is that when it re-exposes Gasset or not Gasset, talented players, reinvigorated or not, it just brings us back to that debate that we've been having all season on the show and off the show, that the pre-season fitness regime was very fucking light. And yeah, it just seems that you could say, oh, it's a shit excuse. They're supposed to be top level players. They're supposed to expect to play twice a week. They're supposed to aim and be ambitious and be fit and take care of themselves. But I can't help but coming back to that feeling that we're still paying the price for a very poor pre-season. So in Ligue 1, we won 2-0 against Nantes at home. Then we lost 2-0 away to Rennes. You both sort of said you weren't too concerned about that. But I guess last time we were talking, you and me, Kay, certainly, we were like, oh, yeah, top four is achievable. It still is mathematically. We're much better off than we were before Gasset came in. But Charles, do you feel like against Rennes we reverted to
Rennes is exactly what we just described? Is that this group of players is average, and that's why we've been. I mean, the goalkeeper has become shit. So when it's time to make a save, like the first goal from Rennes, he doesn't make it. And is the same thing on the side, on the other side of the pitch. It's about scoring the goal. We're underperforming a lot. So that's a group of players which is average, average plus, but perfect for Conference League, nothing else. Same thing, the manager, easier to fix the head. But when those players are a bit better, they relax. They play only 80-90%. You play against Rennes, it's a tough game. I think I said it on the group, there are always few games to me which decide on our season. It's away at Lille, away at Rennes, and away at Nice. And you can see the season when we win there, because it's tough there. You know you're going to suffer. Can you suffer? Do you enjoy suffering? You know, like what Griezmann tend to say, he loved playing with Simeone because he discovered how to learn to suffer. You're tired. Do you want a coach to tell you you're tired? Or do you want a coach to tell you, yes, you're tired, but you're going to suffer. You're going to run even more kilometers. And that's the problem. This group of players doesn't want to be tired. They don't want to fight. So Rennes, here you go, you lose 2-0. Oh, is it bad? Oh, yeah, it was before the international break. We're going to have a bit of break and we're going to come back strongly. You know how it's going to work. 10 games to play. Well, we have six weeks left. Do you see this team of players be capable of winning games back to back? No, something's going to happen. Injury, short group of players, a bit of unlucky against Paris Saint-Germain, the referee, blah, blah, blah. And you're going to finish 6-7. And Rennes is exactly the point. We created more XG, more chances than Rennes. But Mandanda made the save. And they scored the goal they had to go, and Laperre didn't make the save. Our strikers, when he was about putting in the net, they failed to do so. Rennes, Terrier, is a good plus player. But when he's at home, when it's a big game, he's turning up. One opportunity for self, bang, goal. That's the difference. So no, I'm like 2-3 weeks ago. We are exactly where we're going to be finished. 6-7. Sorry, guys. But at least we're going to go to semi-final like Liverpool.
Okay, anything to add?
Yeah, Charles just gave some stats there. I remember, like, so yeah, it was pretty poor. Like, some individually bad performances, but I'm pretty sure we had more shots. I would definitely have more possession, and the passing and stuff wasn't that bad. It was the end product, and it felt like a bit of a kick in the teeth. Mandanda at the end for us looked like he was ready for the retirement home, and then he's had a good game.
It's exactly that, Kelly.
The game that he's had, so it was like it just kind of signified that like how the tone of the game, if you like. But when you asked about being tired, I don't think it just stems from playing twice a week. As I said, I think we've had a lot of players gone to AFCON who've had to travel and play out there as well. So as I say, I don't accept it usually as an excuse. There will be an element of fatigue. What isn't acceptable is to have a manager and players publicly saying that, especially a player that's off to international duty and, if was asked, would play both sets of 90 minutes in those games for his country in Klaus. So those comments, to say them publicly, to me, are a disgrace. Even if there's an element of truth in it, that should not be coming out of the club. It projects an image of, like, we're kind of on the beach apart from the European. Yeah. The game wasn't really a disaster. You've got to think as well, Ren, that for me, you can say, oh, any touch when you're running at speed is going to bring you down. For me, that was not a pen. It was an incredibly, incredibly soft pen. And again, a keeper mistake. I don't think it was like that bad a game. We weren't majorly outplayed or anything like that. You know, there was... But again, the tired element is undeniable. It was there and seeing some individual performances, but we just don't need to hear that. You need to regroup after the internationals and come back fresher. We don't need to
Just to conclude on that point, I mean, Ren, with a penalty, which is 0.7, so got 1.4 XG, but the ex post shot, which means not the quality of where you take the shot, but how you're going to take the shot, is way better. So the chance for Tate to score a goal was 0.3, but because he put it exactly the right position, he moved up to 0.75. But for us, we got a lot of scoring opportunities. according to FBref, we have 14 scoring opportunities, but exactly zero turned into goal scoring opportunities. We had 8 shots. We took 8 shots in the box. Only one was targeted. So that tells a lot. On both sides, the goalkeeper being average, our striker being average.
But couldn't we have equalised as well? I don't know if I'm in the wrong game, sorry, I'm tired. Did Aubameyang attempt a chip that went wide?
Just before the penalty.
Yeah. So it could have feasibly been a draw. Like, that's what I mean in terms of...
That's a problem. That's a story of
the game's not as bad.
But exactly that, Sean, you've just said. I mean, just as we were saying at the beginning that we've had the rub of the green, whether it was Villarreal or some of the Ligue 1 games where we won them, like, this was it. Like, sometimes, I guess the point is that the rub of the green maybe played a very important part in many of those games, even though we were good and the opposition was shit. When everything's going your way, it feels like everything's going your way and you're an unstoppable train. But when it doesn't, suddenly, as we've all just said on the show for the last hour, like we just don't, this squad doesn't have, whether it's a character or whether it's just a global team experience of confidence or capacity to just keep their heads up after conceding or having an incident go against them. We don't have that anymore. We had it sometimes under Tudor last year. We had it under Sampaoli quite a lot. It's just run out. And when it goes against you, it goes against you. And that hand game was a thing. That's the theme of the Ligue 1 games. Conclusion of that whole period, very quickly. We did well. We won the games that we wouldn't have won probably, or we may have won, but not by the margins we won if Gattuso had stayed. We're through to the next round of Europe. Could be worse, could be better. But to conclude the show, we need to now look ahead because it's the international break. And two facts. So that the first fact is obviously inevitably the fixtures. We face PSG. We face Lille away. So PSG at home Sunday, Lille away Friday. Then Benfica twice, because and said we can't go into detail. We don't do a show about Ligue 1, we do a show about Marseille. But for the first time ever, I think the LFP have moved the weekend Ligue 1 games for Marseille, Lille, and PSG that are still in Europe to a couple of weeks later in midweek to maximise the rest period and stuff, which is unheard of but quite refreshing. So that's our next four games. PSG at home,
I think that was a game against Nice.
That was the game that's moved.
Yeah, I think so.
The game against Nice is moved to 10 days after Benfica to the Wednesday. It's quite ironic because some of our lads had booked travel to go out there, and for the first time ever, as I've said, Lille FC have moved the game to facilitate the rest period between Europe. But that's the first undeniable fact I raised, was the fixture list is now getting very tough. And the second fact is, we now know this, we're recording, it's what, Monday, the 25th of March. The international break's been disastrous. We've had shitloads of injuries. And not necessarily for players who've gone away to the national teams, even though Sar and Gay have picked up... I say minor injuries, but apparently Sars going to be out for at least 2-3 weeks, Gay probably for 10 days. But just looking at the players that didn't go away on duty, Bamumite is apparently out for the rest of the season due to an awkward challenge from...
Luis Enrique.
Enrique in training, ironically, poor guy. Who else?
Send him back to Brazil.
Who else is injured? Rongier is still injured. Okay. Apparently, he's had a setback. He was supposed to come back.
Garcia.
Yeah, Ulysse Garcia, who, yeah, random sub left back. He's out injured. Do you have Murillo? Like Rongier, apparently, he's had a setback and it's uncertain when he's coming back. So, sadly, over this international break, we're fucked, aren't we?
It's not great in terms of squad depth, is it? Especially with the run of games we've got. Yeah, in terms of if everyone is genuinely tired, it's not, but there's going to be little room for rotation, is there? Asar and Bamo obviously have been in the first team as well. Sorry?
Don't give them an excuse.
No. I'm being a bit tongue in cheek with that, actually. But for the PSG game, actually, they've got injuries as well. Marquinhos is out. Bokola is out. It's not ideal, but what can you do, really, just other than hope in the next round of game? There's one game left, isn't it, in the internationals? Just hope nobody else gets injured, I guess.
Mbappe, hopefully.
Look, I mean, on this, when you're a football player, you want to be here exactly in that position, that situation, by mid-March. You don't want to be too far, so you still have something to play in the league, and you still want to be qualified in European competition. 10 games until mid-May. Whatever you have a bench, no bench, I don't care. This is the time really to finish tired, exhausted, but you want to play this game. You want to play a quarter final against Lisbon. You want to play at home against Lens with us potentially moving Lens and finishing fourth. You want Velodrome to push you against that game. So I don't want to hear anything. Injury, no injury, tired, no tired. Everyone 200% is 10 games. And that would be once again utterly disappointing if I'm seeing this kind of attitude or comment from the management. You just look forward, look to the end, heads up, and just go on the pitch and give 200%. That's it. I'm not typically a big fan of the Mouille de Maillot, but literally is the reality. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Lucky for us to still be in a position to play something in the league and to play a quarterfinal of Europa League in Benfica. So, come on, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, you look back over, I say history, but, you know, by history, some people will mean 100 years, but like, personally, like the last 20 years, I guess it's our age group, and you guys are younger than me as well, but, you know, ironically, like some of the, yeah, the most thrilling, lots of lows, because it's disappointing and frustrating, we're not as good as we should be, with the highs like this season, like, Marseille is one of those teams that, you know, the last time this happened, like, it's a bit like the Drogba season, you know? We were average in the league. I think we had, like, one of our worst ever, if you look at form, if I remember correctly, I read it, I think last week or the week before, we had, like, something like 12 or 13 defeats in the league that season, finished sixth, whatever. As we know, we went to Europa League for the UEFA Cup final because Drogba was Drogba. It feels a bit like one of those where it could go either way, because none of us expect anything. I mean, personally, if we finish fifth at this stage, I'd be pleasantly surprised, because it's like damage limitation. Top four would be almost miraculous with the run of games coming up. Who knows? Sharp to your point, you know, Mouille de Maillot, it's one of those, yeah, there's injuries. But if you're one of those players like Luis Enrique or someone who basically, you know, pretty much you're guaranteed to get game time, well, damn boy, your only job is to be 110% fit and fight and show that you belong and that you're not just a squad player and a bit part actor. So it could go that way. Who knows? And Aubameyang could score another 15 goals, Drogba style, between now and the end of the season and carry us to a semi or even further to Europa League final. We finish eighth in the league, but personally, I'd take that, because it's like a throw on the emotions after a frustrating season. But it could also go the other way, where it could completely collapse. And I guess a bit like the Drogba season. I mean, no expectations. With experience, especially now, 20 years later, I'm expecting the worst. I'm expecting nothing. I'm expecting exactly the excuses and the collapse and, oh, we're missing players. Oh, it's a tough run of games stuff. But that's the thing with Wrexham. You never.
Oh, really we are too far from top four now. So we're gonna prioritize the away game.
The European Cup.
Yeah, how many points are we away from that, Charles?
Only four or five, no?
Yeah, but
yeah, 43 points, 39.
Problem is not the number of points. Is we are playing, we have the toughest fixtures, and there are teams between us and the top four. It's not we are fifth. Lens can do better.
But nice say we beat Lille, better. Then would be 1 point, depending on what happens in their next fixture.
Well,
so
once again, Lens has an easy fixtures next two games. So we'll be back in the top four.
Yeah, but I think it's when we play Lille, or I think it's when we play. There's a game week where there's a Rennes Nice and a Lille Lens, and we're playing. I'm not sure which game week it is.
Look, we have the toughest fixtures.
We do, but the point I was making is I've half written it off because you never know. But at this stage, I would sign right now for fifth and Europa League semi against Liverpool at the minimum. Cool. I'd be happy with that because it was so bad. Like, it was looking so grim in September, October that it's a minor miracle if we at least had a bit of a hope and emotional and miracle, whatever.
So, yeah, so this weekend we got Lille against Lens. And when we play Paris Saint-Germain?
Ah, it's this weekend. You're right. And Nice-Lille, no? Or Nice...
Nice is playing Nantes at home.
Oh, that's a win.
And the week after, you have Monaco against Rennes when we play against Lille. But once again, Lens is playing Le Havre at home. So when we have our tough game, our position, one of the two ahead of us got an easy fixtures. Like the week after when we play Nice, you have Monaco against Lille, but Rennes plays against Toulouse, and Lens is going to Metz. So once again, it's not all about us.
But well, yeah, exactly. We're not masters of our destiny, sadly.
Yeah.
And basically, the conclusion will be, even if we somehow imagine we don't lose to PSG and we don't lose to Lille, I mean, I would sign for two draws personally, but hey. But we will lose ground on our opponents, whatever. But the conclusion will be, yeah, it was cool. We had a revival under Gasser when he came in. But the you look back and, oh, we lost against Brest and we drew against Metz.
I hate this season.
And we dropped the points against, we just weren't good enough in the games that really. And it's, again, the irony is, it's our best home record in I can't remember how many years. We're unbeaten at the Vélodrome. And it's still not going to be good enough. You know what I mean? It's just this club, man.
It's like a martyr, you know, Christian martyr. Mm. And you just want to tell the Romans, please finish me now. Kill me, please. Every time, oh yeah, I can still breathe. And then they're coming back. Oh yeah, now you got the lion and the tiger. Come on, please finish me.
Anyway. Very quickly, let's end the show because we've overrun. Predictions for PSG Sunday? Kaylee?
I would take a draw, but I think we'll probably lose. I'm only really confident about the Benfica games at the moment, to be honest. But PSG, I'll take a draw,
3-1 for Paris Saint-Germain with a dodgy penalty. So he can say like, oh yeah, it's because of the referee. Like 1-1 at half time, and then we start the second half, they got a dodgy penalty.
We were saying before that Kaylee joined us pre-recording, Charlie's Benoit Bastien, the ref. It's what his
worst record
for us. His eighth PSG, is it? Is 7 for 8?
7.
We've lost all previous 7.
Yeah. And he's the referee got the worst record with
like win ratio for Marseille. Yeah.
Yeah. Typically we
I was gonna say it could be worse, it could be Turpin, but that sounds
actually
next case scenario.
well we were saying, Kelly, we were just saying before this as well, before you joined, Turpin hasn't refereed us this season a single time. since the loss away game last year.
That was by request, though, wasn't it? I'm surprised they've taken the request on, though.
By request or whatever, but it doesn't matter because everybody else is fucking us anyway.
Yeah, we've had one good forgot his name.
We're fucking Arsenal, Rapa. Let's be honest. You know?
Rapa is good with us. We never got her on that.
She has been this season. She has been.
Oh, I forgot his name. We've only had him once, and he was objectively bad for the opposition, but he gave us every single decision.
Dejalod.
No. Yeah, that's him. That's him, yeah.
Dejalod.
Yeah, it's Dejalod. Like the old school Said and Jimmy we used to have for a certain period, and even he went to shit come a time. I'd like to think that because contrary to the last couple of seasons, like we usually did well after the international break when the Sampdoria and especially Tudor after the World Cup, we went on an insane run. The breaks have not been good for us, especially January under Gattuso this year. We came back and we're absolutely dire. I think we'll lose. I think we'll lose 2-0, and that's being conservative. And I hope he breaks his fucking leg tomorrow in Mbappe, but he won't. And he's. I also hope, you know what, guys, I'd love for us to qualify for the Champions League every season, but I will be in pain if we draw Real Madrid, which I think that's where he's going to end up, and he'll probably skin us again. So for his last game for PSG at the Velodrome, he's going to go mental, I reckon. He's going to kill us.
I think it'll be something out left field, like, what's he called again, Kang In Lee from Mount... from four, something stupid like that.
Or a fucking Belair de Yon goal or something, but yeah, okay.
No thanks.
Who knows? But yeah, sorry guys, we've overrun. Sorry to Stefan, who's going hopefully not to have too much of editing to do, but it's, went off on the tangent, but which was quite cool as a debate. Guys, thanks for joining. We'll record again.
Thanks, Ben, for hosting.
In a couple of weeks, I guess. Hopefully, it will be the same as the last time and we'll be in the European semi-final and then we'll have a lot of exciting things to get hyped about and do what-if scenarios and stuff. But yeah, as always, thanks for listening and thanks, guys, for joining.
C'était un plaisir.